Okay, thanks for choosing GoldSeek.com. Radio is a trusted source for economic and market information. Today's special guest, Frank Holmes of U.S. Global Investors. Well, the CEO and Chief Investment Officer of U.S. Global Investors, Mr. Frank Holmes, makes his debut appearance on GoldSeek.com Radio. His firm manages mutual funds and hedge funds focusing on gold, natural resources, and emerging markets. Welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
Let's begin with one of your recent articles. You share an interesting fact regarding the gold shares, that high volatility we apparently have to endure as we have now over the past 2 or 3 years actually can work for us. It can be a positive, as it tends to wash out some of the weaker hands very quickly. You show that in the last 3 decades, the XAU has never recorded a string of losses that lasted more than 3 years.
Yeah, it's quite rare. And the other thing that's rare is that we like to look at statistics that try to measure volatility is very different than risk. A company can have risk because of financial covenants or et cetera, but what is the DNA of volatility of different asset classes? And what we've seen is that the DNA of volatility for gold, bullion, over any rolling 12 months, it can go plus or minus 15%, and this occurs 70% of the time. Now, if it falls 30%, buy, because this is very rare, and then there's a 90% probability of it bouncing at least 15% or going back to the mean. If it jumps 30% over any 12-month period, that means take profits, because mathematically it says over 30 years of data points, the odds of reverting to the mean are extremely high. And when gold hit $1,900, it was up 2 standard deviations over 12 months. And it went through as a huge correction. Now, gold and gold stocks have 2 different DNAs of volatility. Gold stocks are 3 times that number. So you're talking about close to 40% DNA of volatility. So any time, that means 70% of the time, gold stocks can rise 40% or fall 40% over 12 months. Anytime it falls more than that, then you have the probability of a rise. And this is just a 12-month rolling. Now we take a look at decades and we look at other snapshots. And what's rare is that gold has only had 1 down period in the past 12 years, bullion, but the gold stocks have taken it on the chin for 3 years. And what we try to do is put that in context over the past 30 years of data. How often has that happened? And it's happened 2 other times in addition to the recent 3rd time. So odds favor of a big rally, especially because gold and gold stocks are down of a big magnitude last year.
The incredible rebound that followed the previous 3-year decline, you also point out this rebound period. You show that the XAU rallied 85% in 1993. You know, U.S. Global Investors Precious Metals Fund, you show, climbed 124% during the same period.
Well, what's important there is countries. And back at that time period, South Africa was a major gold producer. And the rand had gone under a huge decline. So they were able to receive, on a revenue side, huge increase because gold rallies 30%. Therefore, they were able to generate much more revenue. But they're paying in South African rand that would basically from, I think, 7-to-1 to 15-to-1. So their cost structure halved, but the price went up 30%, so the profit margins of free cash flow to South Africa were the biggest in the world. And those stocks, as a whole, went up 120%, and we had shifted a lot of our gold producers into South Africa. Then the following year, the rand went through a huge rally, and we shifted into Canadian companies in Latin America because the pesos of Latin America were under great pressure, but the price of gold had risen. So you had expanding profit margins.
You direct investors to keep an eye on government policies. That the Bank of England was at least somewhat responsible for that 3-year sell-off that culminated in that 2000 to 2001 lows in the gold market. They auctioned off much of the UK's gold reserves, about 400 tons, amounting to $3.5 billion at the time. And of course, you show that would have risen to about $15 billion plus today, about a 400% opportunity cost. Could you tell us then what government actions and policies are you keeping an eye on?
Well, one of the key parts when you look, hear the fear trade, which dominates most of the psychic of North American gold investors, is about 40% of the demand. The other 60% is the love trade. So it's so important to follow what's taking place in Asia and the Middle East. That's one reason why gold went to 1900 is because back in the 70s, Chindia, China affectionately known as Chindia, had no global economic footprint. So they've gone from 2% of the global GDP to over 24% of the global GDP, and they're 40% of the world's population. So as they've grown in their GDP per capita, the consumption of gold has increased all through Southeast Asia, Middle East, etc. So that's an important factor here. Now when we look at this fear trade, which dominates most of our psychic here, one has to look at government policies, not the political party, is what we quite often advocate. And one of the things that took place last year that was a headwind for gold was that at this time last year, on a five-year government, U.S. government bond, you were losing money. If you went and bought one of those bonds, you locked in a loss based on the inflationary rate for the next 5 years. When the government said the Federal Reserve were going to pull away the punch bowl of quantitative easing number three, then all of a sudden interest rates for 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, mortgages all spiked. And with that, we had the CPI number go from over 2% down to 1.5%. So we had a negative real interest rate that by December went to positive. And anytime you can get a positive rate of return on a government bond, then gold starts to become less attractive as a fear in that country's currency. So we look at all these major countries' currencies and look at real interest rates as the determining factor. So what we believe now we're going to see going forward is CPI is going to start to rise. There's lots of capacity utilization opportunity, so there's lots of still slack in the economic engine, and therefore rates are not going to spike up rapidly. We've seen rates actually come down for 10-year, 5-year, and mortgages have come down over the past 3 months. So we feel that we're going to have this compression, and gold is showing that. Gold has had a big pop. In one of my recent investor alerts, I commented that one of the things to look at monetary policy is besides interest rates, is money supply. Money supply is a very important factor in addition to real interest rates. And what we've seen in the G7 countries, and includes America, is that money supply has been growing at less than a 5% annualized rate. Sometimes 3%, America in that range. And all of a sudden in January, we saw an annualized rate spike to over 8%. Well, that is usually a reflection of lots of money velocity picking up, lots of loans being made, etc. And that's usually a precursor to inflation. And gold immediately starts to respond to that. So those two factors that all gold investors that are focused on the fear trade should be looking at is what are real interest rates on five-year government bonds and what is the growth in the money supply.
Two other indicators that you watch closely, the ETF inflows, and you've noted that these gold ETFs, such as the Street Tracks and others, you also note that the COMEX gold stockpile is running out of physical yellow metal, and you think that this could lead to a surge in demand. Please tell us more.
Well, I think what we're witnessing is that our time horizon, most hedge funds is 30 days. Most mutual fund investors are 1 year, 3 years max. So you'll see that 3 years seems to be the key factor, and there was huge redemptions in the gold funds because they were down for 3 years. And I think it's important to take a look at the Chinese have a different horizon. And what we're witnessing is that renminbi last year was strong. They have the largest U.S. foreign reserves, and they've been slowly rolling that into gold. They've been the huge, they're the largest gold producer in the world. They absorb all their own gold supply. And two, they're also importing the greatest amount of gold as they're building their reserves. So converting a strong currency and converting some of their U.S. reserves, et cetera, into gold at a cheaper and cheaper price, that a hedge fund wouldn't do this because they have to go mark to market every month. They have a very short time horizon. China doesn't. China is going to build this up over time. It takes 5 years to accumulate where they can have 2% of all the reserves into bullion. And they're not going to, they're going to buy in these sort of down periods. So as coming back to that thought process, as Robert Freeland said, that they are the biggest commodity hedge fund in the world. Whatever they want, get long. And whatever they have extra off, get out of the way, because they're just going to dump it. And something they're not dumping is gold.
Some folks have referred to it as a gold singularity when the yellow metal crosses the threshold, disappears into the abyss, because there are some curbs on exports, just the opposite of India, where there are curbs on imports. And that's a good segue into another topic you raise, and that's India might just ease its gold import curbs. Please tell us more and how that might impact the markets.
You know, that's a great question, and another thought process is that if the government doesn't track the gold, it doesn't track it because they stop selling it through the post office system, and they stop selling it through some of the banking facilities and chains, and therefore they don't have to report it. They don't have to report it. Their current account deficit looks better. If they turn around and have to report it, and you start seeing all this gold demand coming in, then their current account deficit looks worse. They have a currency issue. So some of the thoughts out there is that the government has this policy is actually, it's a switch, try to impose these other variables, but gold still is still showing up in India. And so that, to me, is a real significant factor. I think that's also this bullish for the rest of the countries is from Austria to Australia, the gold refineries are booming in business. They're still having record gold coin sales. And I think that the G20's meeting, and the G20 is not about trade. You hear all these protesters, etc. They just don't get it. It's about tax collecting. It's synchronized global tax collection. And you don't see the trade ministers from the G20 getting together, but you do see the finance ministers getting together. And so as that becomes more restrictive, then you're seeing around the world that people are saying, you know what, I'd like to have a little gold. Because there was, I believe for a while in Venezuela, that if you had a credit card issued from Venezuela and you had to travel to the U.S., your credit card was only allowed to go to gas stations, they were able to decode it, and to buy food. You couldn't go and go to fancy places or buy clothes or other commodities, etc., like radios or televisions, etc. The credit card was prohibited from doing that, and that's basically for controlling your money. And that sort of becomes a sort of gold bug fear that they should start to own gold, and you're seeing gold coins rise. And I was commenting to someone the other day, and they were telling me, as most interesting, they said, actually, the biggest shortage is bullets. There's rationing of bullets. There's not rationing of gold right now in the U.S. And so I really don't know that fear trade that comes out in the marketplace, but I do know that it's just prudent to have some gold jewelry for the one you love. It's very common in the rest of the world, to Asia, Middle East, etc., to give a gold coin for graduation from high school, a gold coin for any type of an anniversary, or gold jewelry, 22 or 24 carat jewelry. And that cultural affinity, I don't believe, is going to go away. But one of the things last year you did see for that gold love trade is that the GDP per capita actually went flat in India. And that, to me, is more significant because there's a high correlation of rising GDP capita in China and India that's led to the strong jewelry demand.
You also touch on the global gold supply, that this could be an issue, that perhaps we're just not seeing quite the output that folks are expecting, and there might be some delivery issues in the future. Any comments?
Yeah, I think there's so many delays and disappointments. It's so difficult to mine gold. Mother Nature has its challenges, and if you're in Latin America, you've got local community issues. You have governments that move the goalposts on a regular basis looking for tax revenue. You have the commodity risk, and then you have Mother Nature. They have, like in Colombia, they have illegal workers. Good first-class Canadian mining companies get blamed for destroying Mother Earth, but really it's illegal workers and mine workers that steal the gold, use cyanide, etc. So you have it so difficult to actually get supply on side. So a lot of companies have had massive delays and disappointments in delivering the gold that they said they were going to deliver. And there's lots of very compelling research that shows that whenever one company says that they have a major environmental problem, a security stock exchange complaint, where there's a tax change, property dispute in a foreign country or domestically, that stock falls for 50% for 18 months. Well, we've had so many companies have one issue like this after the other, that's another big reason for the massive decline last year in stocks, in addition to the price of gold going down.
You also talk a bit about real interest rates and how this can impact gold. And this has actually been a subject for a lot of discussion for several hundred years by economists. When we see those negative real interest rates, gold has a tendency to outperform other assets. What are your models showing you and telling you now?
Well, they showed you that the forward curve is anticipating rates, inflation to rise, and we'll see if it unfolds. The balance in gold is saying that the bottom in the CPI that took place in October, November, that's behind us. So I think it's very important for all your listeners to recognize it's not just America. It's any country where the government pays you less than the inflationary rate to hold treasury bills or their bonds, gold starts to become more valuable in that country's currency. And you can go all through Latin America, Africa, you can go to Asia, it doesn't really matter. That's a very important factor. So what we did have for a 12-year run is that gold, the government in the U.S. had negative real interest rates, and that boded well for gold. Finally turned positive, gold took it on the chin. Looks like it's going to turn negative again this year, and gold is starting to find a bottom. We'll see how it unravels over the next 12 months.
Well, as we wrap up, is there anything else on your radar screen? Anything you'd like to share with listeners, topics we haven't covered?
I think it's important for shareholders to recognize that you have a 10% weight in gold stocks. And you rebalance that each year, because when you get these great runs of 120% a year, you take your profits and you buy the S&P. Or you buy good mutual funds. Our Holmes Mega Fund had a spectacular year last year. And if you have the bulk of your assets and your equity assets in the overall market, then you end up doing well over any running time period. Even the past 10 years, this rebalancing mechanism is just prudent. And I'm a big believer that you should buy gold jewelry. You should be able to try to buy it by the gram, so that you can turn around and share it with the loved ones in your life. And this gives a great feeling in your heart, because you're sort of marrying money with the honey.
I wonder if you could tell folks a bit more about the services you provide, as well as any other contact information you'd like to leave with the listeners.
Well, we are a public company. Ticker symbol NASDAQ is GROW, GROW. We have gold mutual funds, and we've received many Lipper awards for our performance in emerging markets and gold and resources. You can follow what we feel about the marketplace. Sign up for Investor Alert. You go to usfunds.com. You can get ultra-short government bond funds, tax-free ultra-short funds. You can buy big-cap growth funds, and you can buy gold funds and emerging markets and China funds. So we do all of that, and on a regular basis, what I think I'm very proud of, which we win awards for, is a weekly investor alert, which goes out to about 40,000 people in 170 countries. It's a SWOT analysis. What were the strengths and weaknesses of last week that affected gold or markets, any market, and then what could be the opportunity or threat next week? It's always succinct. It's always three sentences for three strengths, three weaknesses last week, and next week, what are three potential opportunities, and what are three potential threats for next week, and to try to have this balanced perspective on capital markets. So I welcome anyone to contact us at usfunds.com or phone 1-800-US-FUNDS and receive more information and sign up for our weekly investor alert.
Frank Holmes, thanks for sharing your wealth of information with us here today. We'll look forward to having you next time on GoldSeek.com Radio.